Hi, I'm Jenny Castro, and this is Holding It Together, a joint production of Mennonite Church USA's Office of Women in Leadership and the Mennonite Inc. Too often in the context of faith and lived experience, the stories we tell are stories of overcoming and success. Here on this podcast, we want to notice the beauty of the process, to paint pictures of authentic and whole people. Here, we recognize that to live out our convictions and to create new ways of being in the world, we need one another. We need each other to hold together with us all that we carry in our journey of becoming. We need each other to bear witness to the process. Because, yes, some days we do shine. We are successful beyond our wildest imaginings. But most days, we're just holding it together.
That's my religion. That's my decision. Yeah, that's my religion.
This summer, we're breaking silences. We're talking about subjects that we've typically avoided. We're choosing to release shame, discomfort, and fear as we courageously face conversations we've been putting off for far too long. We're shouting from the mountaintops what's been hidden in secret places. And this is good. It's healthy. I hope you'll join us.
It's like so incredibly unfulfilling to think about living life for something in the future that may never happen.
We begin this series by breaking our silence around singleness in the church. Erica Littlewolf is from the Northern Cheyenne Tribe of southeastern Montana, and she currently lives in North Newton, Kansas. She is the program coordinator with the Indigenous Visioning Circle of Mennonite Central Committee Central States. She'll be reading her essay on singleness in the church that was published on the Menno Snapshots blog in August of 2016.
It is difficult being unmarried or single in the church. I first noticed it in college. I went to the church on campus and it was fun because we had a college students group that all went to church together. I soon found out it was a place that a lot of people went to find a partner or people of similar interests to date. As each of my friends got married and began having children, I realized I started hanging out solo or with older people who were also single. After college, I moved to Phoenix. I had single friends and we would hang out all the time, but none of them went to church and neither did I. I continually tried to attend different churches and found none of them met me where I was or spoke to where I was in life. At this point in my life, I've moved around a few different times and have a bit more life experience. I am now 35 years of age, but I still find church difficult because it doesn't meet me where I am at. I have yet to find a church that accepts me regardless of the roles I play, my marital status, who I am outside the church doors. I long for unconditional love and support as I find my way in the world. I want to be free of the compulsion to preface, allude, or pretend to be someone or something I'm not. I want to feel valued and encouraged for who I am deep in my soul. I want to be seen and the gifts I offer to be valued. I want to be invited to do things, asked to go places, loved as a family member when I'm not biologically related. Instead, at church, I see young couples pairing off, couples with children pairing off, and older people with their partners pairing off. Everyone has a place and knows their place. It seems I am left in an odd mix, unsure of where I fit, where I belong. And even more painful, after all the pairing has happened, the assumption is that I too should pair off in a romantic relationship. People have said some incredibly surprising things. The right one is just around the corner. Sometimes you have to work on yourself first. God knows the timing. These comments imply that there is something wrong with me, that in order to be complete, I must get married, and that once I do get married, then surely I must have kids. I tried carrying these expectations by getting married and settling down, but my story didn't end happily ever after. I lived with lots of internal tension. I quit a lot of my church work to be focused on being home. And eventually I discovered my calling was in both areas, not just one. The reality was that while I was married, I felt more accepted by the church, and yet I felt further and further from myself. Through my divorce, I felt pushed out and not supported by the church, like I'd somehow been muted, yet I felt the most like myself. After my divorce, I saw the gift singleness can be. I have flexibility, I can plan trips for myself, no extra people or extra packing. After a long day of work, I can go home and zone out on television and not have anyone depending on me. Singleness can indeed be where it's at. But eventually I confronted my own personal reality. I deeply wanted a husband, but that was not the circumstance I was living in. I was scared to name what I wanted because marriage might not be in my future. I realized that what I wanted may not be my journey in life. So I've learned to be content with my place in life, with my reality. I recognize that neither state of being is better than the other, single or married or somewhere in between. We all matter and have gifts to offer. As a divorced and unmarried person, I have a story that isn't common in the church and a unique perspective because of my experiences. I've realized my story and journey are relevant despite the ending. Because I don't live near my family, I am called to be present and to making relationships outside my immediate family. I find I am a good all-hours support person. People can call me at unexpected times. I can be on call when needed. For example, I was able to care for my sister's other children while she was having another baby. I recently was at my neighbor's house for dinner with my mother, and we were talking about this very issue. Not fitting in church. They asked what would help me. The simple answer is for the church to meet me where I am in life. I should not have to be something acceptable to pass through the doors on Sunday. Practically speaking, it's the little things that mean so much, like watching my dog while I travel for work, picking me up from the airport, picking me up from surgery when I can't drive, inviting me to dinner, and valuing me as an unmarried woman. I don't want to be stereotyped. I don't find my value and worth in my marital status, and I hope others don't either. Don't assume I'm not happy. Don't assume that I'm out to get your husband. If I end up married again, celebrate with me. If I don't, please don't call me an old maid. If I have children, congratulate me. If I don't, do not belittle me with side conversations regarding my fertility. I firmly believe we all want a place to be who we are in the present, feel valued and given space to change and grow. And I find myself wondering, is this a single woman thing? Is this simply the burden of a single woman? Or do men experience a similar reality?
Erica, this essay was written a few years ago. Has anything changed? Is church still difficult?
Yeah, I think church is still difficult. I still feel like, you know, like these certain things, like you have to dress nice on Sunday to go to church. Or when I go, it's like I can share the highlights of my life. And also because I am working for MCC, I always get asked about work. And so I don't feel like people necessarily ask me human things, you know, like what kind of food do you like to eat or how are your dogs doing, things like that. So I still do find it difficult to go to church. And along with that, I've had many conversations with young people, usually in their mid-20s, early 30s, and I'm not the only one. And some of these people are single, some of these people are married, and they also don't go to church, and they find it easier to meet in small groups with people that they can be completely transparent with and find this to be more helpful than the formalization of a church.
That leads to my next question. I remember when you wrote this, you received a lot of responses. Your courage to speak your experience and your truth resonated with a lot of people. Did that surprise you?
You know, it did surprise me. Sometimes I tend to think, oh, I'm alone in how I feel kind of thing. And it was interesting because I even had some of my male friends come up to me and were like, Erica, thanks for sharing your vulnerability. But I think the most mind-blowing comment I got was a woman that came up to me and she said, I know exactly how you feel. She says, when people break up, to go into Bible school classes. She said, they don't know what to do with me. And this is like a 30-year-old single woman, no kids. She said, so they put me in with the youth. And I was just like, are you kidding me? And it was kind of funny because it's so uncomfortable to think about. But yeah, it did surprise me that I got the responses that I did.
You've talked about connecting with so many different people who resonate with your experience. Have you encountered a circle where it feels you can be you and you are seen?
Yeah, I do. I think it comes a lot with who I hang out with within like MCC, who I see at like Hope for the Future gatherings, a lot of my coworkers with MCC. And I think I've found a group, like a core group of people through those connections that I can connect with. And I was also connecting with a group of young parents, and we would just go have breakfast on Sunday at the truck stop, and people would bring their kids and we would hang out that way. And I loved that. And that felt like community to me.
So we don't talk a whole lot about singleness, at least the way you talk about singleness. We talk about, you know, college and single groups, but we don't talk about singleness the way you do in your essay. Why do you think that is?
You know, I don't know, but I keep trying to figure this out. I mean, there's these unspoken rules that you're allowed to be single and almost expected to be single throughout college. But it's like once you leave college, you should be getting married, and then immediately after marriage, you should be having kids, and you should have a stable job. I also think it could be hard because it's culturally abnormal, and I don't know, within the church, I should say, in the Mennonite church, I would even say in the broader church, and I'm not sure if this comes from some biblical understanding. I think someone could find a Bible verse to make it relevant as to why you should be married, and I'm sure someone could find a Bible verse to explain why it's okay being single. But I think it's one of those things we don't talk about, and I tend to think it's probably because it's linked very closely with sexuality. These are the topics we don't talk about, and I think it leads into sexism, it leads into patriarchy, it leads into these traditional roles of how we think women should be, how we think men should be, because also closely linked with that is the idea that women should mother. And I was fine being in that group, and now I'm like on this campaign to be like, I want to be a woman outside the definition of mothering. I have pets, but that doesn't mean I'm mothering them. I mean, I tend to say I'm their pack leader, and I have nieces and I auntie them, and so I don't want people to have to fit me into some paradigm because they can't understand me outside of mothering. And I was also thinking, like, back in my community, there's not really much of a formalization of marriage so much as an idea of they've been together long enough that they're considered married. But how I get viewed in my community as being unmarried is entirely different. And I think it's because my family's there and we all serve roles. And so I don't know if some of it is linked to these ideas of a nuclear family, because when you understand family bigger than being a nuclear family, it's not necessary that someone is married or has kids. And so when I go to my community and my sister's there, my dad's there, and my nieces are there, and my auntie's there, it's not really in the conversation, or it's not a question or anything like that. I just fit in. Just another body taking up space, eating food.
So in this essay, you name that you have desires to marry or have kids, and that you have had to face the reality that that might not be in the cards, that this might not be your path. And I love what you say. You say, I've learned to be content with my place in life, with my reality. Regardless of whatever dreams we might have or dreams that have been put off, this idea resonates. Learning contentment as we face an unclear future. How do you practice contentment? What are your strategies to practice contentment when the future feels unclear?
I think for me, I struggled with even finding the word content because I knew I'm not striving for happiness, because happiness feels like it's dependent on your situation. Like it could become this like roller coaster where you're spiking up to happy and then you're falling down to sad. So I thought, wow, content's a good word because it seems like it's foundational, that despite your conditions, you can always choose to be content. And I wanted it to be a neutral word, you know, that it felt more neutral than happiness or sadness. And I think for me, like the biggest thing that has helped me is to really focus on being present, which is extremely, extremely hard. And where I came to understand this was I had been living in Albuquerque. And I had known maybe 3 years before I had actually done it, where you get these little inner urgings like, oh, I think I've outgrown this town. And I had always been wanting to move to Kansas. And people were just like, what? You want to go to Kansas from Albuquerque? And I was just like, I don't know. I mean, and I didn't even like Kansas for the longest time, but for some reason it started growing on me. And I had known I was getting these little urgings and I put it off. And when I really looked at why I was putting it off, it was like, I was waiting around for a guy to be in my life. So then perhaps I could be married and we could move together and I wouldn't have to do it alone and I wouldn't have to be lonely. And that is the reason, like, which is incredibly embarrassing. But then eventually I got to the point where I felt like Albuquerque just spit me out. Like it was just like, you don't want to do it. We're going to push you out and you're going to hate us. And that happened. And so I moved. And I remember moving in that first month, calling my dad almost every night and just crying because I had wanted to move to be able to sit with myself. But then when I actually had to sit with myself, it was so uncomfortable. It was so quiet. It was so lonely. But then I got used to myself and realized I had changed. And in that, I thought, you know, it's like so incredibly unfulfilling to think about living life for something in the future that may never happen. And so when I started thinking that way, I was just like, wow, how many things in my life? I'm waiting till maybe I lose 5 pounds. I'm waiting till I have a little bit more money. Or I'm waiting till someone gets a little bit older, assuming that person is going to live to be older, assuming I'm going to live to be older. And so like looking at things that way, I just got in this place like, what the heck am I waiting for? And why do I even think I can afford to wait? Like life is incredibly, incredibly short. And it put me in like a different mindset. So I got the mindset and I got the justification, but it's the daily practice. How do I be responsible and still carry a planner that puts me out like a year? How do I quit obsessing over things I've done to offend people that are definitely in the past, but I can't get over it? And so how do I put myself in the here? Like, how do I function in the now and hope for tomorrow, but then at the same time be realistic? Tomorrow is tomorrow. I mean, it's not today. And yeah, it's a daily practice. And I don't know, a lot of it is, it's hard. And I think I do things that I'm probably not even sure that I do. But yeah, I still struggle with it.
I love the way you end this piece. with a real question. You ask, is this something that is a woman thing that women deal with, or do single men experience this reality? Have you gained any insight into this? Have you heard back from single men? I think I have my suspicions about, I think you name like patriarchy and sexism play into this because you're a woman, these kinds of expectations are put upon you. Right. But yeah, what have you heard back, or what have you gained any insight?
I think a lot of it is linked to our biological clocks. You know, it's like men can continue to have children into their 200s, you know, 300s, whatever. And women, we have these so-called biological clocks. And so we're only good within a certain time frame. And so, no, I think because of sexism, because of patriarchy, because of these ideas that are put into what it means to be a woman, especially a good church woman. You're gonna be married because supposedly that builds in some form of accountability or honor of some sort. And then you're gonna have kids because then you're productive, because God forbid you just sit around and take up space. No, it for sure is different for single women. The amount of, I can't even explain how many times, I mean, good, well-meaning people. Hey, Erica, how are you doing? Second sentence. Who are you dating? And I'm just like, no, I'm fine. You know, like you could have asked 1,000 different questions before you asked that question. And then usually the third question is, I know a single guy I could set you up with. I can't imagine that men carry the burden of society as much as women. Maybe they feel it in church, maybe they feel it a couple times, but in a way it's like men are rewarded if they're single and they're rewarded if they're married. They're not necessarily called out for their blatant sexism. And when they do understand sexism and patriarchy and speak about it, then they're rewarded for that too. And as women, I think we're just constantly criticized, like, she's not parenting correctly, or I mean, why can't she get these relationships to work? I know when I was going through my divorce, a lot of people didn't even ask what had happened, but assumed that I had done something wrong. And for one, to think that a relationship depends on just one person is a fallacy, and then along with that, automatically, I must have done something wrong. Yeah, I'm still at my original thoughts, and they've only been reinforced.
I want to go back to this idea you mentioned it earlier about like sexuality, monitoring people's sexuality, especially women's sexuality, and how much more acceptable it is for a man to be single because his, and I'm using air quotes, purity is never questioned. I mean, do you think that has something to do with it too?
Yeah, I do. And when I look at things, I'm just like, okay, come on now. We're relying on men to tell the truth in regards to who they've been intimate with. And yet I feel like women are accountable on a whole nother level, and there's a power structure involved. And there's morality involved. And so then there becomes this like internalized morality scale of who we deem is more valuable, who is more accountable, who can have better ideas, you know, kind of thing. Who can we trust? We can trust these married people to go off and do something, but we never question. And is it our place to question? I don't know. How healthy is that marriage? Yeah, I don't know. I just go off on all these tangents with no answers.
Right. I think there's an assumption that somehow a married couple is perhaps more stable or more trustworthy. There's like this assumption, well, a single woman can't do this.
Yep.
A single woman can't do this or this or this or this, you know. But a married couple can. Or a married woman can, because her spouse will be there.
Right. And I think having been married, like an additional part of that is, once I did get married, it's like I was so-and-so's wife. And I'm just like, hey, I'm Erica still. And the invisibilization as me as a separate individual, and like the overemphasis of him. Yeah, it was just so incredibly interesting. And I even see how I do that with my sister and my nieces. So I forget to ask how my sister is. I call and I'm just like, how's this niece? How's this niece? How's this niece? And even through her role as a mother, I have erased her as an individual. And yeah, I gotta just keep calling me back. Like, I think everyone wants to be acknowledged as, yeah, we're a part of these groups, but we're also individual people.
To be seen and valued for who we are, apart from the role we play or the responsibilities we carry, to be loved for who we were created to be.
Truth.
Vulnerability requires so much courage, y'all. It is such a gift to be let into the reality of someone's experience. Thanks, Erica, for your courage and your honesty, and for breaking silences together with us. What do you wish people were talking more about? What conversations have you been yearning to have? Send me a voice memo at jennifer.c@mennoniteusa.org and tell me about your subject. Why is it so hard to talk about? Why do we need to talk about it? Perhaps you'll be featured on our Breaking Silences Talk Back episode. This episode was produced by me, Jenny Gastro, with editing help from Shay Langley. Our theme music was written and recorded by the very talented Addie Lichty. To find more music by Addie, look for Addie and the Subtracts on Facebook or Addie Lichty on YouTube. Holding It Together is a joint production of Mennonite Church USA's Office of Women in Leadership and the Mennonite Inc. Look for us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Fireside, or wherever you prefer. If you have a second, I'd invite you to rate and review us. And please tell your friends about us. I'm your host, Jenny Castro. Thanks for listening, y'all. Talk soon.
That's my religion, that's my decision, yeah, that's my religion.